I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. On this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we speculate what Shohei Ohtani will say about the massive scandal involving him and his interpreter. We will be giving out our picks for this season, our division picks, our World Series picks, as well as covering some other news and notes around this here baseball league.
Three more sleeps till opening day if you don't nap. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world expected to clear waivers. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and won't anybody want us?
Nobody wants us. The question is, will we accept our assignment to AAA? That is something we are going to figure out over the course of this podcast, this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, the baseball season starts this week, so that's pretty exciting. We do have two more podcasts before then, and on this one, we are, of course, going to update the latest on Ohtani, although not too much, because we believe he will be speaking later today after this podcast gets posted. But we have some news and notes from around the league, some roster decisions we find interesting, a couple other transactions, extensions, other bits of news. And then at the end, or the second half of the show, we are going to give our official picks, which are sure to be correct, and we believe in so much.
Jordan, we're three sleeps out, man. From
three sleeps.
Opening
when
day.
You start counting the sleeps, that's big time.
However, as a big napper, I'm probably six or seven sleeps away.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, now it's that now I'm like motivated not to nap because it's like that's a waste. I want to keep that sleep count steady, you know. Yeah. Like I want to make sure if I'm going to bed, I'm making progress towards opening day. But yeah. It is coming. We are almost there. The Cactus League and Grapefruit League slates are basically done. I believe there's like a couple more games going on in Florida, but we've transitioned into the exhibition kind of portion of the spring training schedule.
Which means it's time to crown a champion.
Yes. You know what? Let's actually start with that. I know we're going to get to some spring stats later, but your Baltimore Orioles put on an absolute clinic this spring. They are currently, I don't know if they have another official game left, 23-6, which if I can quickly pull up my spring training standings since 2006 spreadsheet, which is a real thing that I have, I believe that is the best record of any spring training team since it's been tracked over the last 20 years, but I can check that. Does it feel like that? I don't know how much you've actually watched.
Yeah, it does feel like that. They don't lose. And now the reason that the Orioles are so good in spring training, okay, I do think it is indicative of something, that their depth, particularly in the offensive side of the ball, is so good in that organization. Spring training games are won and lost by your second level of players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If your stars are only playing in the beginning, how good are your guys in the eighth and ninth once your rich players have gone home for the day? And the answer for the Orioles is very, very good.
Yeah. And I mean, they've got a 793 winning percentage, which from what I can tell is the second highest since 2006. The 2016 Nationals went 19-4-4, which is not nearly as many games, but that's pretty close. The Royals are historically dominant in spring training. They went 25-7-2 in 2013. But yeah, this Orioles team, 23-6, and I believe only two ties for the O's, is just an incredible showing. And then on the bottom, I mean, hey, you got the White Sox 9-20, but then the Twins 8-18. Does that mean? Well, we'll see if that might sway my AL Central pick later. We're going to see both the White Sox and Twins finishing at the bottom of their respective spring training leagues. Yikes.
And then Cactus League champs. What a surprise. The Los Angeles Dodgers, this is why they went out and got Ohtani to win. They went out Ohtani to win, right? Because something the Dodgers have not done recently is win in regular season. So they wanted to go out and make sure they got the Cactus League title as well.
Yeah, they got that. They finished with the second best run differential besides the Orioles. Now, I'm noticing the Rockies and Giants finishing second and third. That makes me feel like, oh, hold on, watch out. This NL West is really about to be, you know, something special. But anyway, we'll hit some individuals later. But congratulations, because your Orioles, really, you really put it to them. And I think that your point about the depth is absolutely accurate when you've got, you know, Stowers and Cows are homering every other day. That's a pretty good spot to be in.
From the Grapefruit League Championship to the second most important story in baseball, Shohei Ohtani and the Ipe gambling scandal. The consensus over the weekend, Jordan, is that there's no consensus. People are confused. The information continues to trickle out very, very, very slowly. I don't believe we got anything new of note since we last recorded, except for MLB opening an investigation, which came out on Friday afternoon. The news dump of the century, like an unbelievably well-timed release from MLB. I think it was like 5:58 p.m. Eastern time on Friday afternoon during March Madness. It's like it didn't even happen, right? If a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? If an Ohtani gambling scandal drops it Friday afternoon, is it even real? Yes.
And the answer is yes. And this is why I just begin, while I agree it was hilarious, of course, the 6 p.m. News release is objectively funny. Is the concept of a news dump, does it really function in 2024? I'm not entirely convinced that it was the same thing as it was, many, many years ago. But it is still funny, and it is not surprising that that is how they handled it. But the main update is that we don't really have it yet, because as far as we know, we're recording this on Monday morning. Yeah, go ahead.
Time out. Before you get to Ohtani speaking today, MLB announcing that they're investigating, that's what I was kind of going bonkers about on our last episode, was like, okay, you don't have to charge him or suspend him or deem him guilty, but this is a situation that necessitates more gathering of information. I mean, this, you gotta look into this further, or else you look, by you, I mean, not you, Jordan, MLB looks weak as hell if they don't do anything. And I do think that even though that announcement was delayed, I was relieved that they are actually going to go ahead and do something. However, I was not relieved that they misspelled Ipe's name in the press release, which was hilarious.
That was bizarre. I don't really know how that happened. I was like, am I missing something here? This is strange. But I mean, I hear your point. I personally don't really want to overrate. It's like, do we think that they were not investigating it internally for all of last week? Like, ESPN had gone to them 2 days before, MLB had even, or ESPN even put anything out. Like, they were looking into it. But yes, the acknowledgement to the public that we are taking this seriously, I agree, is important.
I think it's also important because there's a belief both inside the game and beyond that even if Ohtani is guilty of anything, MLB would sweep this under the rug. That it is in MLB's interest to not put the face of the sport in a messy, compromising situation, right? And so when they were silent for a handful of days, I think it only stoked the fires that they're just going to try and hope this goes away as quick as possible. Even though all the statement needed to be on Wednesday was, this is concerning, we're looking into it, we'll comment further once we have more info.
Friday, right, yeah. I mean,
I'm just saying, like,
I understand that. I like saying with the news stuff, like, this is obviously such a big story. If they're pretending like it was going to go away, that was never, ever going to happen. Now, anyway, what is happening next? Okay. The reason why we're not going to spend too much more time on this today is because yesterday, ahead of the Dodgers Angels exhibition, Ohtani showed up in the clubhouse and the reporters were like, hey, dude, what's up? How are things? What's going on? He was like, I'll talk tomorrow. And so what that means is that at some point today, they have a 9 p.m. Eastern start tonight, again against the Angels. He says he will speak today to the media. Now, what that actually means is interesting and relevant, right? Because there are a couple possibilities as to what speak to the media could be. It could be...
One could be he doesn't end up speaking to the media.
Totally
happen. Like, yep. Ohtani could show up today and be like, actually, I changed my mind. I don't want to talk today. And this is just like, that has happened so many other times with him and other players that if Ohtani did not address reporters today, I would not be shocked at all.
Sure. But if he does, again, there's a range as to what that could look like. It could be because in situations like this, in controversy and scandal, oftentimes what we get is a prepared statement, which is this is my official stance, right? Of course, we've heard from the spokesperson and the spokesman, and they say he's been the victim of a massive theft. He could have a statement that he reads, presumably in Japanese, but would be translated to the exact English that I'm sure his camp would want. He will say that, and then he will leave, right? That's possible. Or
that's,
he will...
That's, yeah. Let's call that Notes App Ohtani.
Yeah, yeah. The IRL Notes App statement, right? Or he will do some version of that, and then he will open it up to what I would assume to be a very, very small number of questions. And then at that point, it will be kind of on him and on the media to ask the right questions to maybe get any sort of farther into this. Or he'll just deny, or say, I can't comment. We will see, right? Because we are now far enough into this from a legal proceedings and a legal investigation standpoint, from the perspective of his team, that I am assuming we are going to get a good amount of nothing. I would not be surprised if we get some sort of doubling down of the I am a victim today. But other than that, it's very hard to really tell what more we are going to get today.
Yeah, I'm a bit skeptical that we're going to get too much today. I think we will get a lot of I can't comment on that, because number one, he probably can't comment on that, whatever that is. And number two, it is probably in his best interest to not comment on that moving forward, even if he can comment on something. I do agree with you. I think the idea that he is a victim, that is important or worthwhile for him and his camp to continue to convey to the public, that he is not a perpetrator, he is a victim, that Ipe took advantage of him, that he was not involved. The details of that, you know, will continue to come out. But Ohtani today will be revealing, like, what is the tact, what is the line, what is the strategy that they are going to choose? Because we have already gotten a changed story from Ohtani World, which means that they could pivot again. Like, they, I don't think they will,
yeah,
but we're going to get a sense for, like, the road they plan to travel over the next couple months as the story continues to fold out.
I agree. And that was the last thing I was going to say, is the fact that they've already changed their story actually makes me think the opposite. Like, they have to go all in on the most recent thing. Like, there's no turning back from the victim narrative at this point, as far as I'm concerned. Whether that's true or not, you know, that remains to be seen. That's going to take a while to find out. But from what I think we're going to be hearing from him, I think they have to stay consistent from that moving forward. But you know, we will find out, and we will address it on Wednesday.
A couple of quick questions logistically about this. Do you think this is locker room, press conference room, or dugout?
Probably dugout, because if you are actively holding a press conference, you are basically inviting more media than you even want. Not that people aren't going to be covering it, but the dugout, as chaotic as it is, as we saw yesterday with Dave Roberts, who, by the way, it's worth noting that Dave Roberts yesterday, when asked about it, he gave a no comment, but he also said, like, in you know, reference to Ohtani speaking today, he was like, yeah, that'll be good. You know, it'll be nice to hear from him, whatever. Like, he gave kind of like a, that should be helpful or something. So I'm going to guess dugout, but I don't know.
Is Nez Bilelo there? Is he seen? Is he visible? Is Ohtani's agent in the frame?
I doubt it, because that would then open up for people to be bothering Nez. And if we are leaning more towards the prepared statement, which I'm guessing it will be, that will be, they don't need Nez to actively be there for that. I mean, sure, like, Dodgers PR is going to be playing, like, mega defense anyway. So I doubt we see Nez, but I, you know, we'll see.
And then who's translating for Ohtani?
Right. So that was certainly, I think, the first question. As we know, the Dodgers have, there's the translator for Yamamoto, who was recently hired, and then there's Will Ireton. Will Ireton is someone who was previously Kenta Maeda's translator, and has been working in Dodgers player development for the last few years, since Maeda has not been on the team. And he's very recognizable. Like, he's around all the time. It seems like he was tasked with translating for Ohtani before all this came out, because they were only allowed to have one translator in the dugout. I still don't totally understand that rule. But I would guess it's him. But again, it's possible you don't even need a translator for this if they're not taking questions, right? It's possible he just gives a statement in Japanese, and then someone, could be the translator, but, like, it's not like he's directly translating. He's just reading a statement in English. So I don't know. Again, it's going to depend on whether or not he's taking questions or not. Obviously, if he's taking questions, he's going to have a translator, and tough assignment for whoever that is. They could bring in someone else that's just like, I have no idea how any of that works, so I'm not going to speculate too much.
the funniest scenario here, because that's where our brains go, is typically at a press conference like this or a media session like this, the first question is usually more often than not asked by either the sideline reporter or the MLB.com beat or some sort of team employee type person. And the first question in these press conferences is very rarely particularly, how do I put this? Is this a word? Investigatory?
It's
invasive.
Just, it's never going to be right. It is incisive. Always going to be the most direct baseball. What is happening with the team? How are you feeling?
Correct.
XYZ. Yeah.
So if they're the first question to Ohtani in this scenario is something like 1-1 in Korea, how's it feel to get your first games as a Dodger out of the way? I will laugh my ass off.
I think that is absolutely what is going to happen if there are going to be questions.
You think so?
Yes.
You think the first question to Ohtani
yes.
will not have anything to do with the gambling scandal?
I do. Yeah.
That is outrageous.
I agree. It is, again, now that's assuming it is from an official, you know, I don't think anybody else that's doing the job, that's fine. It's not the person who works for the team's fault at all.
Can you imagine if Tish Thompson, who wrote, did all the reporting at ESPN for this story, went and said, how are things in Korea? You feel good at the plate?
She should. That'd be a great bit. Anyway, okay, so that's that. Let's be done with this because maybe he says something that makes us want to podcast again before Wednesday. I doubt it, but either way, we will address it as necessary.
Do you know he pitches too?
Not right now. Let's move on to some more interesting quotes than what I believe we'll be getting from Shohei. We're going to bounce around a few. Just again, this is going to be kind of rapid fire. We're going to get through as much as we can, keep this podcast efficient. So we talked briefly on Friday about JD Martinez signing with the Mets. That by itself was not especially shocking. Made a lot of sense. Mets desperately needed a DH. As we know, Mark Vientos did not make the team. So they bring in JD Martinez, who will make their offense a lot better. Now, JD Martinez was rumored to have turned down a similar, if not bigger, offer from the San Francisco Giants earlier in the offseason. And when JD had his intro presser with the Mets, he gave this quote, asked about turning down a more lucrative offer from the Giants. He said, quote, if I'm being honest, it's not the best hitter-friendly park for me. If I go there and hit 260 with 20 home runs, people are going to say I'm old and I'm washed up and I'm kind of done and I'll find myself out of the game. I wanted to give myself the best opportunity. It's nothing against the Giants organization at all. I just wanted to give myself the best opportunity to continue my career in baseball and keep playing. San Fran is a tough ballpark to hit in, especially when you go the other way there. City Field is not like that. Most fields aren't. That's one of the big ones.
Mm.
So, the first thing, this is true when like any baseball player tries to reference anything very specifically that can be fact checked from a statistical standpoint. And the results here are kind of interesting because my first instinct was, yeah, it isn't fun to hit in San Francisco. I can't tell him he's wrong about that. However, Citi Field, not particularly enjoyable to hit in either. It certainly doesn't have the same reputation, but I would not necessarily look at that as one that is especially easy to hit in. And, you know, Mike Petriello quote tweeted it and said, yep, like Citi Field actually rates as more difficult park for right-handed batters overall in terms of a park factor. But then a couple other people pointed out that if you look at the expected home runs, this is kind of a wild swing, to be honest. So Baseball Savant has kind of a expected home runs by park. So last year, JD Martinez hit 34 home runs, of course, playing with the Dodgers. And the projections at least say, again, based on where the balls went and then the batted ball information and all this stuff, is that if he was in New York, he would have hit 39. And if he was in San Francisco, he would have hit 24, which I believe is the lowest number of any park in the big leagues. Do you think he's referring to this one specific metric?
Yeah. Do you know what JD stands for? Just dingers. Baby.
Yeah.
Clearly that's all he cares about, Jordan. His name isn't just doubles, okay, or just ex-woba. It's just dingers Martinez. And I think that it is a combination of that stat and just the way that right field, again, he's a right-handed hitter, so other way for him is right field. The way that right field looks in San Francisco. I mean, call me stupid, but it's a big ass wall. And then it's a far ass wall. And that enough would turn me off to wanting to hit there. Now, again, like neither of these parks are particularly great to hit in as a right-handed hitter.
But to me, the reason why it's so fascinating is it's like, okay, JD, but like your, his, what makes JD Martinez awesome is, I mean, I know, I understand why you said what you said. Like he's not, you know, JD doesn't stand for J X Woba.
Sure.
But like if he goes and is still awesome and he hits 260 with 20 home runs, but he still has, you know, all the incredible underlying metrics that he just had last year. You know, in theory, there are enough smart teams to be like, yeah, JD Martinez is still good, right? I mean, we saw this with Jock Peterson. We've seen this with other guys. So it is interesting, kind of a it's a fascinating admission where he's like, yeah, like I'm awesome, but there's only so much I can do hitting in a park like this. Like, sorry, but that's very much baseball player brain. I just think it's a very interesting, honest peek into how they view themselves and how they kind of view how they think the industry views them. I think that is interesting.
Now, the obvious next step is to look at his numbers in these two stadiums over the course of his career, which is relatively small. He has 88 plate appearances in San Francisco, and he has hit 205, 227, 410, which is not
great.
Particularly good.
No.
And then he has only 48 plate appearances in Citi Field, and he is even worse there. 196, 229, 348.
Okay. So, I mean, this is the other problem with this, right? Is, again, that's small sample, so I'm not going off of that. But now you've just invited this for the whole season, right? If JD Martinez can't hit, every time JD Martinez hits one to the deepest part of Citi Field, we're going to be like, okay, dude, are you familiar with this ballpark? Because it's not that much better. And then the other thing that's just interesting is just comparing him and seeing what Jorge Soler does, right? Now, I know Jorge Soler got a multi-year deal and got way more money, and it's much easier for him to sign there. But if Jorge Soler goes and just rakes in San Francisco, he's going to be like, oh, like I guess you scared? You scared, bro? You can't come hit homers here? Jorge Soler's like, I'm chilling. Like, what's the problem? I'll go be the first right-handed hitter to ever hit one into McCovey Cove. Let's do it.
We should talk about the other JD Martinez quote before we take a break.
Please.
Did you see this
yes.
one?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes. I forgot about this one, too. All right. Yeah. Give me this whole quote, because this is one that was like pulled for a bunch of graphics. But I think a full dramatic reading would be worthwhile.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the full quote. I want to win. I want to be on a team that wants to win. Being 36, I know I don't have too many years left in this game, so I want to give myself the best possible chance to win. I'm addicted to the playoffs. I've been there multiple times and to the World Series. Once you get a taste, it gets addicting. I know this team has a lot of tools. I played against them last year. Da, 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 team's going to be good. Da, 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 da. The quote that got pulled out, obviously, was I'm addicted to the playoffs, combined with the Mets not exactly being a team that looks to is going to be hooked on the playoffs.
Well,
that's
the thing. To me, it just ripped me back to a year ago and what we were saying about the Mets. Now, obviously, the expectations are very different this season, but it is just a reminder of how fast some of those some of that rhetoric can turn. And then we're on records here saying that we don't think the Mets suck, and we think that there's a chance that they could be very good. But there are enough questions where it's like, all right, dude. If you're here's the funny way to put it. Now, I know we didn't know how the rest of that offseason was going to go, but Mets versus Giants right now. Are you addicted to the playoffs or are you addicted to not hitting 260?
But like being addicted to if I was addicted to the playoffs, like I would have gone back to the Dodgers and taken
for like $2 million.
$7 instead of Teoscar Hernandez. Right.
To like be the bench bat. Well, he can't play outfield over. Yeah. No, obviously not gonna play outfield. But no, to your point, right. That's the part that is funny. But it's okay. I mean, JD Martinez has a World Series. We understand.
Yeah. Also, amazing postseason hitter. 119 plate appearances, 294, 386, 588 for a 974 OPS and 10 homers. Like, this is a good thing to be addicted. There are worse things to be addicted to than the MLB postseason.
Yeah.
They should 100%. Take this quote. MLB should take this quote and do like a, are you an addict? Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to love playoffs.
Yeah. I'm sure that would hit.
That would be great.
With the right combination
absolutely.
Of music and stuff. Anyway, yeah. So JD Martinez, we wish you luck returning to your playoff addiction. All right, Jake, let's so JD Martinez. Now, one interesting about JD Martinez, too, because of when he signed, is that apparently he will be beginning the season in the minor leagues because yes. he is not ready to face major league pitching.
And he is not the only player who will begin the season in the minor leagues. And when we get back from this quick break, we're going to chat about a couple players who thought they might be on the big league team, but will start the year in AAA or maybe AA after this Baseball Barbercast. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. We made the big league roster, but we're not the only ones.
I was like, did we make the big league roster? Which big league roster did we make? I feel like I haven't been informed yet. I'm still waiting. I'm still in camp, but yeah. I'm like on the bubble. I'm like, am I going to make it because someone's on the IL? Am I going to make it because JD Martinez needs more minor league at bats? Like these last couple of days, I'm sweating it out here.
Jordan, as someone who is currently, you know, planning a wedding, trying to figure out who's on the big league roster and who's on the AAA B list. You know, it's a very exhausting process, but I can tell you right here for the first time in public, Jordan, you made the team. You will be at my wedding. Okay.
Nice. Nice. Oh man, that's awesome. You call me into your office, sit down. This is a good one to start with. So Wyatt Langford makes the team, makes the Rangers. We've basically all seen it coming. He's been batting third the entire spring. They basically told us after the World Series, like, yeah, no, we actually were seriously considering calling him up when Adolis Garcia got hurt. Like, he's one of the best prospects in baseball. His minor league numbers last year at every level were patently absurd. He's been amazing this spring training. Did you watch the video of Boch telling him he made the team?
I did not, but I didn't need to because I can only imagine it was Wyatt Langford being like, oh, that's wonderful. Can't wait to get after it and show you guys I deserve it.
There was no, it was like the opposite of like, you know, we've seen managers kind of fake it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, like I got some terrible news and that's that you got to move all your stuff to Texas. It's like, no. Boch was like, you know, one of the best moments for me is telling guys that they made the team. And that's what you just did. It's like, all right. Wyatt Langford's like, yes, sir.
Cool.
Thank you.
Wyatt, hey, Wyatt, anybody who's watched you play baseball ever knows that you're obviously going to be on the team. Congratulations.
The best part is he walks out. By the way, shouts out to, I'm glad the Rangers, these are still great. I want every version of these videos, so I'm not dunking on it. It's great.
Right. Even the most boring version of this is watching.
Still love him. He walks out, and either Chris Young, who's in there, or someone who's like off camera, just goes, what a stud. I'm like, yeah, he's pretty good. But I will say, like, while we've already, because he's been so good in the minors and because he's so good in spring, and we've just like grown used to like, yeah, Wyatt Langford, he's on the Rangers. He's awesome. He's an amazing Major League Baseball player, even though he's yet to play a game. It is unbelievable. Not only was this guy playing college baseball a year ago, he, for those unfamiliar with his story, was not a particularly famous high schooler. 4 at-bats as a freshman at Florida, and then is just unreal as a sophomore, and then even better as a junior, and then, you know, the rest is history. He is going to, like, I saw a projected lineup, like, the Rangers, someone, I don't know who tweeted out a graphic, like, Wyatt Langford made the team, here's a projected Rangers lineup, and it was him batting, like, 7th. It's like, I think he's just going to bat 3rd or 4th. Like, I think they just think he's one of their best players already, so I could be wrong about that, but we'll see, man. He is special.
If Evan Carter is concerned about the job not being finished, well, for Wyatt Langford, job just started.
Job very much just started. So just a reminder, I mean, even with the injuries, like this Rangers offense at full strength could be really, 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 really ridiculous. Who are some other guys that made the team, Jake, that you wanted to acknowledge?
My favorite, I have to say, is Carlos Carrasco, making the Guardians rotation. Cookie Carrasco, longtime Cleveland legend. He, remember, he was on that team when they went to the World Series in 2016. Very, very many iterations of the Guardians, I guess, ago. He had cancer, remember? And then he ends up on the Mets in the Francisco Lindor trade and has somewhat of an underwhelming tenure with the Mets. An injury to, I believe, Gavin Williams in the Guardians rotation opened up a spot there, and Carrasco was in camp and looked good in camp, and he made the team. And so, like, when we talk about, we're like, oh, whatever, video a guy making the team, the idea, like, I wish there was a video of them telling Carrasco he made the team, because that was almost certainly a very kind of cool emotional moment for everybody involved.
Oh, 100%. And if there is something like that, like, please let us know. I haven't seen it. But yeah, I mean, you know, having already pitched, you know, 11 years with Cleveland, come up with them, he just turned 37. And it is just a great contrast, you know, to the rest of that extremely, extremely young rotation. So that is definitely a very cool story. Let's talk about the Orioles here in terms of the guys that made it and didn't make it.
Or now, not.
Yeah. Or
we could talk about something else.
Oh, okay. So you're not particularly thrilled about this news. So Jackson Holliday will not be on the major league roster. I don't think,
because he's not very good.
We are especially stunned by this, because if your reaction to this news is this is a farce, he's one of their best players, this is service time manipulation, I can't tell you you're wrong. However, the Orioles were able to have plausible deniability for two reasons. The one thing is that they had a million other players with a 1500 OPS this spring training. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that
Can I push back against that?
Please. Yeah. You're the Orioles fan. Tell me, I'm speaking out of turn. So you give me.
Yeah. I get that, but it's not like they had someone like Tyler Nevin made the team over him essentially. Right. And like Tyler Nevin is someone who I believe has already been DFA'd or jettisoned by the Orioles in the last couple of years.
Correct.
And like he is not a better player right now than Jackson Holliday. Like that is not,
well, for
there's
sure
no
right?
chance.
It's no, like, it's and if, that's the better the player only, versus what we want and need, but that's the thing.
Correct.
That's why it's hard. But still, the more you think about it, of course you're going to end up, I mean, this just goes with a lot of the other, with the Skeens conversation, with the whatever, is he one of our 26 best players right now? Yeah, probably. Can you say
what's the best thing for this guy's development is different than what's the best thing for our big league?
Yes. And especially for the Orioles, this is the other thing, especially if you compare it to Skeens or not. And listen, I some people are going to listen to this and be like, you guys are making excuses for them. This is BS. That's fine. I understand that. I respect and appreciate that opinion. Like, but to me, again, I was just going to say, compared to the Skeens thing where it's like, you're the Pirates. If you are really serious about competing, in theory, you should be doing everything in your chance to eke out every win. And Paul Skeens might give you that chance. Listen, guys, the Orioles are going to be amazing. Like they have, it's easy. If they're thinking bigger picture and they need Jackson Holliday to face more left-handers in the minor leagues, now you can reasonably say, hey, yeah, what left-handers is he going to see in the minors that are actually going to get him ready to face lefties? That's also true. So I don't know. To me, this is one where it's like, he's going to be up soon. I'm trying to get more angry and I'm not getting there. And maybe that's shame on me.
Yeah. I mean, you're a fraud and
and
a loser.
Anti-labor.
Yeah, but no, I think it's more blatant than you do. However, I just, maybe I'm numb to it now. Like, of course the Orioles are doing this. We know this. If they wait a certain amount of time, they get the player for an extra year. Those are the incentives built into the system. And I understand it's different now that if he finishes top whatever in the rookie of the year, it changes. But still, okay, there's still a reason to keep him in the minors for a little bit. Like there is. And like, it's a shame and it's stupid and it's technically not allowed, but the system enables this.
Well,
and
so I, allowed. That's the problem.
Yeah. Like why would,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I
that's,
just
that's
think
the issue. Yeah.
Well, no, I believe you're not allowed to do service time manipulation and be like, we're manipulating his service time.
Oh, right? You're like, not. Well, you can, yeah. Kevin Mather,
you can do
that.
A grievance.
Kevin Mather,
you can do
it the hard way. Yeah. Right.
But you understand my point. Like I struggle to get up in arms about this when it's just so typical.
We shouldn't be numb to it. Like, it is clearly a problem. So, of course, I want to see Jackson Holliday big leagues, and I think we're going to very soon. So, I don't know. It's unfortunate, and obviously, if you're Jackson Holliday and you know you're one of the best players, it does not necessarily vibe with like what you think that spring training should be about.
I'm not surprised. Like, he has 18 games in AAA. Like, that's not a lot. Now, it's also silly because Wyatt Langford has 18 games. Other guys who did not make teams, okay. I was more surprised about Kyle Stowers not making the Orioles after he was just unbelievable during spring training. Now, Colton Cowser was also unbelievable for the Orioles and probably offers a little bit more defensive value than Stowers does right now. The other issue is that they're both left-handed bats. Like, neither of them are obviously going to start for the Orioles right away, based upon their current setup. And so it was kind of redundant. And I guess they just went with Couser because he has a bit of a better track record than Stowers does. But that was certainly one that was notable. They were both amazing in spring.
Yeah, well, and again, it seems like that's really where they went Nevin instead of him, right? Because, and that seemed to be a decision to have a right-handed bat in that spot instead of a second lefty on the bench. So I don't know. I mean, for Stowers too, I mean, it's at least nice to see him kind of reestablish some amount of value because he seemed to be tracking towards getting extremely lost in the shuffle by the end of last year, where it was like, I don't see any way that this guy finds his way back into like regular time with the Orioles. He showed enough this spring where it's like, okay, maybe there's a way. Maybe there's a way.
I used him as an example, like the first brown banana, where eventually if you don't bring prospects up and they don't perform, they not get moldy, but like, that's probably not a fair thing to say about a human being, but like the sheen wears off and the prospect value goes down. And if you do that, you have to bring them up. You have to bring players up and let them play, or you have to trade them, right? Or they become useless. Like, if, think about it like this, right? The Orioles kept Jackson Holliday in AAA for the rest of his life. They are wasting this thing. And now that is also true. They'll never get to do that. But that is also true, like, on a smaller level with lesser prospects. And for Stowers to, you know, unbrown the banana to a certain extent this spring was very impressive. Other storylines of guys who did or did not make teams that stood out to you? Do one or two more, I think.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the only other quick ones are, I just think what happened with Cleveland was really interesting, especially coming off of our AL Central preview and talking about how their commitment to kind of the outfield with Miles Straw was sort of the embodiment of like just kind of being stubborn to the degree that like, this is what we're doing. We don't care if we aren't getting any home runs. Like, he's a great defender. They ran him out there the last 2 years every day. And for him to basically go on waivers and then clear waivers and go to the minors tells me, all right, they are going to try something different. And who that is exactly, it seems like we're going to get a little bit more of a mix of Will Brennan and Esteban Florial in center field. Guys that certainly from Florial's standpoint, you know, could actually give you a little bit more offense. Tyler Freeman, we might see out there as well. But them kind of moving on from Miles Straw, I know he's still in AAA with them, like, that does tell me something. That does tell me that they are actually trying to do something different. Is it going to work? I don't know, but I thought that was interesting.
Let's move on to news and other topics. I would say the biggest one was the passing of Peter Angelos, the longtime Orioles owner. I believe he was 94, 95. He has been more or less incapacitated for the last half decade and has not, you know, run the Orioles for some time now, but he bought the team in 1990. Come on, brain. 1992 or 1993. Jordan can look that up and fact check me, and kind of oversaw the last 2.5 decades of the Orioles. And he is a fascinating character, in my opinion, in baseball history. I think that I would recommend everyone go read Ken Rosenthal's piece about Peter Angelos, because Ken covered Peter Angelos when Ken was working at the Baltimore Sun. The two of them did not get along when Ken was there. And I think Ken did a really interesting job of telling the story of who Peter Angelos was within that baseball context. But the other thing to, I guess, to understand, like, Jordan, we joke about how there is no such thing as like a moral owner. It is hard to be an upstanding billionaire in modern society. Peter Angelos, in a lot of ways, was the best version of an owner, and in other ways the worst version of an owner. When it came to baseball ops, he was stubborn. He was kind of like a junior version of Steinbrenner, who would fire and hire people at will. He would have his nose a little bit too much in the baseball ops side of things, something he didn't know very much about. But what I hope his legacy is in the strike in 1994, 1995, Peter Angelos was the only owner, the only of 28, because he was 28 then, only of 28 owners who refused to accept the replacement players that were not in the union. Peter Angelos had been a union guy. He made a lot of his money off of lawsuits involving asbestos cases for unions. And the idea that, like, could you imagine, like an owner breaking rank with the other owners like that today. Like that is, it's inconceivable to me, really.
Yeah. And to that point, like, yeah, he did represent, and unfortunately, you know, by extension, the way that his son chose to manage the team, became, you know, D'Angelo's name is D'Angelo's name. And right. And so obviously, certainly younger Orioles fans like yourself and younger, like kind of think about the Angelos family and that ownership in sort of a different light because of some of the ways that it's been handled more recently. But to your point, yeah, it is kind of hard to imagine. It is also just a reminder of, because I want to talk about Peter Seidler here for a second here, the range and spectrum of owners and just like what they excel at and how they can connect with the fan bases in different ways or can make an impact on their team, on their community in different ways is just so vast. There's not one kind of owner, obviously. And these are human beings who make these choices and who have these backgrounds and have these histories. And generally, while it does feel like in some ways we have kind of a homogenous group of rich old guys sometimes, it's not that simple. And I think that Angelos' kind of track record is a good reminder of that.
Let's pivot now to Seidler. Peter Seidler, the owner of the San Diego Padres, passed away over the winter, but there was a memorial held for him, I believe, at Petco Park over the weekend. Mm-hmm. What were some of your takeaways from the clips you saw of that, Jordan?
Yeah, again, I think I just wanted to, I don't want to go too in specifics of it, but when you listen to not just, of course, AJ Preller, who has, of course, you know, been working side by side with Seidler over this last you know, decade or so. But to hear the way that players and coaches talk about him, I just have to imagine was unique, right? It felt unique. And the personal attachment, because Seidler's a good representative of someone who was clearly extremely involved in the day-to-day stuff, and that was received in a positive way. And there's reasons to kind of, you know, criticize or not criticize, but like question kind of the ways and some of the decisions and moves that Preller has made during his tenure that in a lot of ways has been enabled by Seidler. But from a fan's perspective and from a player's perspective, it was everything you could possibly ask for, right? It was someone that was so transparent, so open, so committed, so singularly focused to, I want to win in San Diego. If that means we're going to be handing out contracts that the models tell me make no sense at all, that's fine, right? Because for the fans, all they want to know is that you care and that your focus is that you want your baseball team to win baseball games. And at no point would anybody ever question that about Peter Seidler. Now we move into a different ownership group and we're going to see how that translates. But my main takeaway is just thinking about like them just making this Dylan Cease trade. Like obviously Preller is Preller and he's always been that. But I think that goes with Seidler as well. And I have to imagine that the continued commitment to that, as long as he is still in charge, is going to reflect that. And that's why it did not surprise me at all that they were the one that ended up, you know, giving a bunch of top prospects for Dylan Cease.
So Peter Seidler did not win a championship, but I think he succeeded in arguably a more important pursuit, and that is getting the people in your city to care about your organization. Mm-hmm. Seidler, over the last decade, almost single-handedly took the Padres from complete and utter cultural irrelevance to the show in town. Now, part of that has to do with the Chargers leaving, right? Not being in San Diego anymore. But the way that this organization has rejuvenated the fan experience, has given people something to care about. Like, that's the whole point of fandom, right? Mm-hmm. That, to me, is about as successful as you can be.
100%.
Because winning is great, right?
Yeah.
Winning is great. Caring is better. And so I commend Peter Seidler for the work that he did to turn the Padres into what they have become.
And while I agree that you're right, that is almost more important than the actual winning, the money that he did pump into the team has put the roster in a position now where it's like, yeah, like if you squint, this team could make it to the playoffs and go on a run to the World Series in a way that we never, ever would have thought before then, even when they were occasionally, you know, winning 90 games.
Dude, also like, I mean, this is, Dodgers fans will roll their eyes at this, but like them beating the Dodgers in that NLDS, like, well, obviously not a World Series, but Kind of felt like it.
That's time. And it's a memory that, again, was possible because of the investment and what he put into that team. So there's a lot of course, great clips going around in that, but I wanted to make sure we acknowledge that.
Let's fly through a couple quick ones. Mm-hmm. Rangers sign Michael Lorenzen. I think we mentioned this at the back half of last week. They need pitching help because they signed a bunch of old pitchers who are all hurt. DeGrom, Scherzer are hurt. There's one other, Tyler Mahle. Doesn't come back until the middle of the season. So they are a little light on arms for now. Lorenzen will help them there. And if they need to, they can move him to the bullpen. The Phillies trading Jake Cave to the Rockies. Jake Cave, who made the final out of the 2023 Phillies season against the Diamondbacks NLCS, which is kind of wild. He had hung around for a long time, kind of like as the Phillies' left-handed bench bat. And I think that was the only thing keeping him around. And, you know, people liked him in the room, but they're just going to start the season with no obvious lefty bench guy. Yeah.
Why do the Rockies need Jake Cave? I mean, Jordan. Whatever. Jordan. But hey, it doesn't matter because here's the thing. All right. Sorry, Rockies. I know I just made fun of you for half a second. Extended Ezekiel Tovar. Great. Awesome. You have an awesome 22-year-old shortstop that can absolutely play the position. And like this is who you give an extension to. Fantastic. Love it. Shouts out to our friend Daniel Alvarez for first reporting this, of course. But Tovar is like, yeah, that is a building block. That is someone who you want to extend and have as your shortstop for a long time. So credit. Now that, again, same day as trading for Jake Cave. I can't, whatever. And if you're Jake Cave, just imagine you get that news, just the confusion on many levels that you're on.
You're like, there's a team there? I mean, on one hand, like he'll get to play.
I guess.
Probably.
Is he platooning with our man Brenton Doyle? I don't know. So weird. Anyway, Rockies, good job extending Tovar. All right, Jake. We've rambled on enough.
Whoa. And the Phillies extended Matt Strom.
Oh.
Okay.
Yes.
Who is not exactly like the most exciting piece, but he gives them real stability in the bullpen. And if there are injuries, they could stretch him back out to pitch in the rotation. I like Matt Strom. I think it's a good fit. That's all. Okay, go ahead. Let's make picks.
Sorry. Listen, the Grapefruit Cactus League home run leaders. We mentioned Stowers and Cruz. The only other spring training stats thing I wanted to mention, the Tigers pitching was like absurdly amazing. The Mariners scored more runs than every other team and allowed more runs than every other team.
Hell yeah, so, dude.
I would not anticipate that pattern sustaining playing.
Either of those patterns.
Either of those patterns sustaining. Honestly, I hope
more
not.
Likely to sustain.
I guess the offense. I don't know. Man, Mitch Haniger looks good. But yeah, I mean, there was some, as always, there's some goofy stuff. But as we mentioned, the Orioles were the true stars of spring training. Okay, Jake, we promised we would give picks at the end of this. Now, I know we sort of hinted at them during our division previews because we gave over-unders and we sort of threw out the orders of the division. But now we lock these in. These don't even necessarily have to be consistent with what we said during our division previews. Let's do it. Let's do our division picks. Let's take me through these.
We hate doing this.
Despise it.
We do this for you, the listener, and for the lovely, beautiful content algorithms out there. And we do it reluctantly, but we will do it to the best of our ability, and we will do it with a smile kind of upon our face. In the American League East, I'm going to take the Baltimore Orioles. In the American League Central, I'm going to take the Twins. And in the American League West, I'm going to take the Houston Astros. Jordan, thoughts?
Thoughts.
Where are you at with these?
I am in agreement on the Orioles and the Twins, and I am going to officially predict that the Seattle Mariners will win the division.
I'm bias.
It is bias. It's the opposite of bias. I've been picking the Astros for 10 years in a row, and I'm going to go with the Mariners of Seattle to win the division. And I'm going to go, and I will go into the wild card, and I'm going to say that the Houston Astros will be the first wild card team. I'm going to say that the Tampa Bay Rays will be the second wildcard team.
Heard it here first.
And then I am going to say that the New York Yankees will be the third wildcard team. What do you think? Those are my wildcard teams.
So no Rangers, no A's, No Angels.
No Rangers.
No Blue Jays.
Sorry, A's fans.
None of the fun, sexy AL Central teams that people think are good.
Yep. Nope. Sorry. Nope.
All right. So I will go for my wildcard teams. I'll pick the Yankees. I will pick the Mariners, and I will pick the Rays. Those are going to be my three. Yeah, I just...
So we have the same teams. It's a different order.
We have the same teams in a different order, Jordan. That's just life. Yeah, I think we agree that the Yankees have too much talent to really suck, even if Gerrit Cole's out for a while. Mm-hmm. We probably think that the Rays... We believe more in the consistency of the Rays machine mm-hmm. than the Blue Jays offense.
Correct.
And I would say that...
I think I believe more in the Rays machine than I believe in anything.
That's true.
Forget specific Blue Jays stuff. I just think the Rays are going to make the playoffs somehow.
And then if you don't pick the Astros to make the playoffs, like that's what they do. Until they don't make the playoffs, I will continue to pick them to make the playoffs.
To that point, I am picking the Astros to still win the American League. they will be back in the CS. They will be back in the World Series against National League team to be determined in 25 seconds. Who you have coming out of the AL?
So I put down the Twins. Mm-hmm. Okay. I wrote the Twins down. And I don't know if I believe that, but I'm just trying to kind of make a point that people are sleeping on the Twins.
Fair.
And I'm going to make that point here again. I don't think it will happen, but I'm picking the Twins.
Love that confidence. National League. I'll go first. Braves for me. Cardinals. What? I am going with the Cardinals. I think I am alone on that one in the National League Central. And then I do think the Dodgers will persevere through this Ohtani scandal. And they will win the National League West.
They'll keep their head down and truck through the noise.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what it is great, though, is... The Dodgers finally somehow have something that they can use as like, you know,
God.
Perseverance.
I mean,
they're gonna frame this as adversity, Jordan.
This is what they need to do. This doesn't really go with the line of thinking that you're saying. They need to start doing, you know, everybody believes in us. Everybody believes in us, and it's a lot of pressure. So we've really come together and really worked hard to kind of manage those expectations because everybody believes in us, and we worked hard. We kept our head down. We took it one day at a time, and we won 112 games.
Nap time. Right,
you're taking the Braves.
No, but tinfoil hat.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Conspiracy time. The Ipe scandal. None of it's real. None of it's real. It's all a ploy to get the Dodgers to band together as a ball club.
Dave Roberts,
Dodgers
brilliant.
Ownership. Dave Roberts concocted this entire thing so that they would be friends, that everyone would be better friends.
I love it.
What do you think?
No, terrible. Who's winning the NL Central?
NL East, I will take the Braves. Phillies will be a little closer, but not close enough. NL Central, I'm going to take the Cubs. I think the rotation has a chance to be really good. None of their pitchers suck. I know that Jameson Taillon was rough in the first half last year, but he really put things together in the second half. I know he's hurt, but I really like Wicks. I think Kyle Hendricks is still like a very good, totally sufficient MLB starting pitcher. I think Justin Steele, I know he got hit by a comebacker over the weekend, but I just think that I like the Cubs. I trust Craig Counsell. I like the Cubs. NL West. Dodgers.
Okay. Nice. All right. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Who are your wildcard teams? This is way harder than the AL, in my opinion.
Yeah. The Phillies are the first one. I think pretty comfortably are a half tick above the other teams. I would say that just like last year, the Phillies are the third best team in the NL, even though they won't win the division. Like, I think the Phillies will end up with a better record than whomever wins the NL Central. And I think that they're going to be annoying in the postseason again. Like, that's just, I wouldn't expect that to change. I'm going to take the Padres. I think Cease is a huge ad for them. And I think they were just so unlucky last year that some of that will swing back to equilibrium. And then for my last NL wildcard pick, It's not the Mets. It's not the Marlins. I think I'm going to take, I'm going to take the Reds.
If they if they can survive during all these injuries, I think they'll have a good chance, but tough start to the year for them in terms of the IL. I'm going Phillies, Giants, and Cubs. I do like the Cubs. I just don't think I like them quite that much. And I think the Giants, they just added too many good baseball players. I think
that's
They're going to be in the mix there. I do think the Giants are going to be right there.
I agree with you. And the thing is, the problem is in my head, I'm like, the Giants are boring, but like
they still might be boring, but I think they're going to be better. So, who you got coming out of the NL? I assume the Braves.
The Atlanta Braves. I think here's my thought. I am someone who picked the Dodgers to win the World Series for like 8 years in a row until they finally won the World Series in 2020, because my thought process was, well, they have to win one eventually. And I know that the Braves already have a World Series in 2021, but it's kind of like a different core than the one that they have now. Acuña didn't play in that series. Freddie Freeman was on that team. Swanson was on that team. They won the World Series because Jorge Soler, Eddie Rosario, and Jock Peterson got hot. No Spencer Strider. I think this Braves core is going to get another one or get one, and I will take them in the World Series over the Minnesota Twins in six games.
Love it. I think I might have officially given Braves Astros over Astros as my pick, but I'm just going to go back to Astros Phillies. Astros over Phillies. Phillies will vanquish the Braves once again somehow, some way. The Johan Rojas walk-off grand slam will be exquisite. Astros will win another World Series somehow, because that's kind of what they do.
All right. And who is the NLDS MVP? Not a thing.
I'm so glad you
asked.
Okay,
we will be back. We will be back on Wednesday. We'll do picks on Wednesday for like AL MVP, NL MVP, comeback player of the year, shortest player, funniest player, stickiest player. We'll give you all of those and more. We will also preview opening day, all the matchups.
Yes. We'll do a full opening day preview. Thank you to everyone who tuned in and or participated in our inaugural Baseball Barbercast Fantasy Draft. If you want to go back and watch it, it is available on demand on our YouTube channel. Just all kinds of goofiness. The three catcher 16-team league did deliver in terms of roster-related chaos, and I encourage you all to go just watch the last few rounds and see which catchers were flying off the board. It was a lot of fun. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz for making this show possible, and we'll be back on Wednesday with our final off-season edition of Baseball Barbecue. Oh my goodness, the season's almost here. Bye.
A few more sleeps if you don't nap.